Good evening, and welcome to Off the Bookshelf. Tonight, my guests are Jeff Herman, my co-host. This is Deborah Herman, your host. And we have an aspiring writer, an abundance coach, and I hope I say this correctly, Akshay Nanavati.
Did I get that?
Yes,
you did. Wonderful. I'm starting out great. Well, as you can tell by the name of the show, Off the Bookshelf, we're very interested in all things writing and publishing. And Jeff and I are veteran literary agents. And one of the things we like to do is to try to guide writers into making the right decisions and creating the right product so that they can bridge the gap between want to be published and published. And there are many roads to follow. So first, Akshay, we met you at a very interesting event. It was the Harrison's Publicity Summit. Mm-hmm. And you were there to learn how to build your platform and share your message, and you were learning a lot about, I know for sure that you were learning about traditional publicity avenues. And when you came to speak with us, you were talking about wanting to write a book. And in a nutshell, you had a very interesting story. So in a nutshell, why don't you share first a little bit about yourself and then a little bit about what you want to write about, sort of like your elevator speech, and then we can go from there.
Got it. Will do. So a little bit about my background and what actually leads me to the book that I'm writing is I was in the Marines for 6 years. I did one tour in Iraq. And since then, I've actually climbed mountains in the Himalayas. I've skied across Greenland. I dive into underwater caves. And I've started two companies, and now I'm a public speaker. So the reason I bring all that up is I have a very intimate relationship with fear and how fear operates in our life. And that's actually that leads to the book that I now want to work on, is that the book that I'm writing is about fear and shifting the paradigm through which society views fear. So instead of making it a negative, making it a positive, because I believe fear is the precursor to possibility and to living our greatness and achieving all the things we want to achieve in our life. So that's a little bit about what it's about.
Now, another interesting point. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay, because I've been having technical difficulties today, and I think it's just me. I think all of the technology is fine. It's just I'm having the technical difficulties. But one of the things I think that was very intriguing in talking with you is you mentioned that you actually had a congenital heart condition. Was it a heart condition or no, it was a blood disorder. And in fact, you know, because it sounds like when you tell your story, wow, you know, this hero and he's been in Iraq and then he came back and he, you know, maybe we don't relate to the fear aspect of it right away because we're associating you being a soldier and then with doing the, you know, the sports and exploration into nature. So tell us a little bit about that.
So yeah, as you mentioned, I had a blood condition called thalassemia where two doctors actually told me that going to boot camp would kill me. So what I did was I went to a third doctor. I got a letter from him and I took that to my recruiter because I knew this is something I really wanted to do. I'd actually recovered before that from a life of drugs and I knew that this was the way to change my life and to transform the destiny that I had in mind for my life. So since then, when going into boot camp, there was a lot of fear how I would react, how my body would react. But I knew deep down that I could handle it. And not only did I handle it, I actually graduated infantry school as an honor graduate. So it ended up being you know, a very powerful experience for me. But in every one of those, people often ask me when I speak about my story that you seem fearless. And everything that I do, it's not that I'm fearless. I'm actually terrified everything that I do. I was terrified my first skydive. I didn't want to do it. I was actually hoping it'd rain.
But you pushed through it.
I did. And that's where I find the best life is when you push through that fear and see what's on the other side of it. That's why.
So Jeff, I want to welcome you to the show as well. I'm always excited when you can join me because you're – you know, wonderful co-host and, of course, a well-known literary agent. What was your first impression when you met Akshay?
Well, my first impression was that he is pushing on a button which is universal and for which there is a very large potential audience. Because the thing that holds everyone back, obviously, is fear. It's not talent. There's a lot of, I mean, I've seen in my life where the most talented people tend to be the most frustrated and stagnant, whereas people who are talented enough, but not necessarily the most brilliant, are achieving great things. And it's because somehow, constitutionally, they're able to deal with the fear factor. And so it's really a question of how to package his program and how to show that he has a unique program.
Right. So you're headed in exactly in the direction I thought you would, because of course you and I spend a lot of time together evaluating projects, because for us, we meet someone like Akshay and he's got a great story. He's dynamic. He's an appealing young person. You could tell that he's got poise. So our thought is, okay, what can he bring to the table? Because in the book world, it's not just what you can do and how much you can promote. That's a very important factor. But is there a book? And that's the next line of analysis that we have to take as literary agents to determine whether or not to work with someone. So, Jeff, what's your we're going to ask you a question, Akshay, and then as I promised you before the show, we're going to let you ask us any questions you have about this mysterious thing called the publishing industry. And we'll kind of work it that way. But Jeff, so now you've met Akshay, you know that he's got a very fascinating story on many levels. You know, what is your first question that you want to know from him as far as the next step and whether or not this is someone you want to work with?
Well, I'm already intrigued because I think the concept has huge potential. And Akshay impresses me as somebody who's clearly been walking his talk now for impressive ways. So those are all qualifiers. What I would want to do next is really give him an exercise, which would then enable me to help him further, which is I would encourage him to do a first draft book proposal.
Oh, no, the dreaded book proposal.
And the reason I would do that is because it would help me to understand what his program is, and it will help him to create a roadmap for how to build his book, because it's not really a question of just writing a book. It's really a question of architecture for the book.
Right. And that's where, you know, when we attend events where people are thinking about writing a book, this is where it separates the people who are going to do it and they're going to follow through and the people who say, I just don't know what to do, where to begin. And that's one of the reasons we thought to do the show like this tonight, because there are many people who are passionate about their message. They may be building a wonderful platform, but they're going to get stuck. And to have a certain level of career as a public speaker or to create change, a book is – I don't know what it'll be like the next generation. I think people will always be writing and reading. The delivery systems will change, but a book really is an important part of an overall – a career path. So, you know, we see people who are going to leave this discussion with us and they're not going to come back. So we don't want that for you, Akshay. We want you to come back.
Is that if the writer is unable or unready to write the proposal, which really is the roadmap, in essence, that means they're really not ready or able to write the book. That's what it usually shows. I don't think you could, I mean, yes, you can write a whole manuscript without writing a proposal, But you should, but you should still be able to write a proposal before or after you write the whole book.
And, it shows that you can synthesize your ideas into something that has order, structure, and a purpose. And that's very important. It's using, you know, your left side of your brain in a calculated way to think about bringing this message to a greater audience. Sometimes people aren't ready even in terms of their message. So they're not going to follow through. But sometimes the message and everything is in alignment, and that's why they need to learn those next steps so that they will have a book. It doesn't have to happen some people will also hire people to write their books if it's a great message, great timing. But Akshay, you've actually got a background in writing, so you want to write your book and you want to do this yourself, correct?
Definitely, yes. I do. I was a master. I got a master's in journalism, so I definitely want to write this myself.
Great. What's your very first question when you hear two literary agents say to you, okay, great, we like you, we're interested, now you have to write a book proposal?
So yeah, the very first question is kind of a twofold question, but how do you actually write the book proposal? And two, I've been creating a framework for my book. And as I do that and I started writing the book, I noticed that, you know, sometimes it shifts. Like maybe as I'm writing, it goes a different direction. And how do you address that? Should I just then be more clear in my book proposal with chapters? I don't know if that's a clear picture, but I'm noticing a little challenge in like creating the book proposal versus writing the manuscript first, and how you address that.
Do you want to answer first, Jeff, or should I answer first?
Yeah, it's two very distinct questions which actually are threaded together. The book proposal is the protocol that book publishers and therefore literary agents require. If you do a masterful job in writing the book proposal and perhaps one or two sample chapters, you don't have to write the manuscript until after you have the actual publisher's contract and the first check in your hand. That's what a lot of writers like before they even start writing. If you're determined to self-publish, you know, then you don't need to go through that protocol. But the way to write a book proposal is to learn, you know, what the template is. There's really a template, more or less, that has existed for decades. And no matter the shift in technology, there's really no reason for the given template that's now used to ever change, because it does the job. And
right.
You know, there's a book called Write the Perfect Book Proposal by Jeff Herman and Deborah Herman, which gives you 10 actual book proposals, you know, right there in the book. And it critiques each of them in sidebars, explaining what was good about the proposal and what was bad. And then there's also the website that we are involved in. Deb, what is the address again?
Well, what we have is our social network for writers, agents, and editors. It's WayNet, WAENet. And on WayNet, we have free software that a friend of ours developed called BPWiz. I think it's bpwiz.biz, but it's on WayNet, and it is tutorials on and software to help you build the pieces of your proposal. So those are resources for you to actually put it together. But the first step, and in answering the second part of your question, I think I'll take it from here, Jeff, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
When I coach someone in writing a book proposal, one of the first thing, there are two things that we do. First, we have to do the hook or the couple of paragraph focus statement of what the book is about, because that's going to be that's going to guide every other aspect of building your book. And it is really like building something. And the most difficult part of this, where you seem to be discovering the change and the shift when you are creating your book, is the table of contents. People sometimes think that it looks like it's supposed to be easy because it's a list of chapters, but it's actually the tree upon which all the branches will extend. Mm-hmm. And so I always like to say that a table of contents should be, as a good book would be, something that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. If you spend time like a puzzle or like doing a Sudoku, you know, where everything's kind of, it has to fit together before it becomes a finished puzzle, that's how you need to approach your table of contents. And as you see it develop, you see where your book is off structure. You see more clearly where you're headed with it. And as much as it can be considered, you know, to be a little bit of a pain in the neck, I mean, it harkens to days in high school where you're doing outlines. It's very worth doing. It's the most important exercise aside from coming up with your hook. So you may want to, work backwards eventually if you're going to write the whole book. Instead of just working from a proposal, you kind of reverse engineer and then readjust your table of contents and your structure to fit what you discover as you're writing the book. Because often, as we're writing, when we're tapping into this other part of our brain, we learn new things and we make new connections. You see? Go ahead, please.
The most crucial part of the proposal for the writer, in my opinion, is the chapter outline, because that becomes your governor. That becomes your discipline. It's not just a TOC, a table of contents.
Right. You're going, Jeff, you're now taking it after you've got the list of chapters. The next part is what some people call an annotated outline, but we call it, in the structure of a book proposal, the chapter by chapter outline. Is that what you're talking about, Jeff?
Yeah, and each one serves as sort of a mini chapter. Now, that doesn't have to be written in stone, even after you get a publishing deal. It can morph as you begin to write the manuscript, but it'll be for a good reason that it does. But it does do is it gives you the bones of the book. It gives you an anatomy for the book and a discipline and a symmetry that you can follow. And it also, the reason why the publishers are so dependent upon seeing that before they will offer you a contract is it lets them see the anatomy of the book. Mm-hmm. And usually the manuscript will be within 80 to 90% of what the outline actually promises.
Got it. That's actually very comforting to hear. That was my concern, is that if I submit a proposal and it ends up changing a little bit, will that be a problem? So that's very comforting to hear that.
It cannot be a radical conceptual change without publisher consent, because they gave you a contract based on a real-time document. And some publishers will even attach the proposal to the contract as an addendum. And they do that to cover themselves in case you decide to write a different book and say, you know, well, here's the manuscript I promised you, but it's not. So if there is going to be a radical departure, a significant departure, and common sense tells you what that means, you need to sell that to the publisher and probably get something in writing from the publisher affirming their consent to that.
And this is, you know, this is kind of the protocol for nonfiction books, and there's good reason. I mean, you can't just say, gee, I wasn't in the mood. I decided that book was boring and I'm going to do something else, you know. And because there's so many different aspects to a book other than, you know, you're considered the talent. You're providing the book, but you've got a sales department, a marketing department, and all of these people are taking your product and they're putting it in their list and supporting it. So they kind of want to know what they're getting, you know, so you can get a sense of why. What else would you like to know?
Yeah. So the next question, you know, some of the things you've been mentioning is that about going to a publisher with a proposal. Now, I've heard that, like, do you need to go to an agent first, or do you go directly to the publisher? And how do you get an agent? What's the best way to do that?
Okay. The best way to get access to the publishers, and mm-hmm. some people would tell you the only way, and I would tell you it's not the only way to get access to publishers, but everyone in the industry agrees the best way and the most effective way to get access to the publishers is through a literary agent. And the reason for that is the publishers do not really have in-house screening. Okay. They're not screening what everybody is writing. They're only screening what is being pitched by the literary agents.
That now, Jeff, I'm just going to interject.
Sure.
That in the old days, in the vision that people have of the day of publishing, you know, those days are gone. And so they used to have junior editors who could take their time to go through the submissions that are considered what they call slush pile. There may still be some of that that goes on, but truly they are now dependent on literary agents more than ever to pre-screen and to give them good quality work that they can consider and not, you know, they only have limited hours in the day.
Yeah. Okay? And a writer maybe, you know, may have one good editor contact that they made at a conference or something, but the agent, you know, will have dozens of strong contacts.
Got it.
And the agent rarely makes one submission at a time. The agent may make as many as a dozen competitive submissions at the same time. So it just creates a whole new world of velocity and potential having the agent, which means that the writer initially should focus on trying to get a good literary agent.
And how do first-time authors go about that? As a first-timer, is it, you know, do they?
Well, Jeff, I'm going to address this.
Sure.
Because what another reason why, Akshay, we put you in a category of, wow, we want to see what he comes up with. Even though you're a first-time author, now we don't have time to fully discuss this because the hour goes by so fast, and I forgot to even announce that this is live call-in if anybody wants to ask questions of any of us at 888-627-6008.
Lower.
888-627-6008. The reason we were interested is because you are doing so many of the things that take you out of that very first level, you are a new author category, because you are building a platform. You have been developing mastery of the internet, digital marketing and social media marketing, and I hope perhaps we'll even bring you on in the future after you get through your book writing, you know, to talk about that, because you're really doing everything that you need to do to level the playing field. So if you were to write a book proposal and you were to include all that you've already done in understanding how to draw attention to yourself, a publisher is going to look at that differently, and they're going to say, perhaps this person with a good, strong book and a good, strong story and a program to the book, which Jeff will explain in a moment, that this person can bring people to buy the books. And that goes a long way in taking you out of that very beginning category of novice, beginning author who would not even be necessarily looked at by a literary agent. So I want to make that very clear. So those of you who are listening, pay attention to what you can do so that when you write to an agent, you have a greater chance of being picked up and guided, because that's where you're going to get your guidance. Once you hit the publishing stage, they expect you to be ready, because they don't have time and they don't have the resources to develop your career. They want people who are on their way up. Am I correct, Jeff?
Yeah. They basically want an author who could be his or her own marketing department, and they want to leverage that power.
Right. So kudos to you. You are doing what you need to do. Now, Jeff, I heard you say, when you were talking. Now, we'll get back to answering your question about finding a literary agent because, well, I'll just quickly touch upon it. There are ways to find out who they are. We have Jeff's book, which actually is hot off the press, the 2013 version of Jeff Herman's Guide to Book Publishers, Editors, and Literary Agents, and it lists agents and what they look for. It lists even their hobbies. And we've also digitized that on Waynet. So you can find out who they are. You can find out what they like. And the protocol is to send a query letter. Either you go to their website and you do it online where they say to do it, you know, and send a query letter, or you do it still through a regular letter. And that's the first step. You ask to be invited to the next step, which is to send more material or to send a book proposal. The query letter is simply a letter of introduction, asking.
Well, it's a pitch
asking.
Letter.
It's a pitch letter, exactly. So my question for you, Jeff, on behalf of Akshay is, and other writers, you mentioned in all of this conversation the word program, and you said that when an editor looks at the book proposal, they're going to be looking for a program. So can you explain that a little bit?
Okay. If you're talking about a self-help how-to book, what you're talking, and that includes a huge category of books. I mean, everything, you know, from diet to health to motivation, what, you know, that's a huge number of subjects. And what it means is the author presumably has a A to Z program that they are presenting that the reader can integrate into his or her own life. It's not just the purpose for a self-help how-to book is not entertainment. It is work. it's medicine. It doesn't mean it can't be enjoyed, and it doesn't mean that it has to be painful. Sometimes it is painful, but it's meant to be a facility for enabling the writer to achieve a goal, to make themselves better or healthier.
You mean the reader?
The reader, excuse me.
Based on what the writer has developed, perhaps this is how they help themselves, or this is how,
or it's what they do professionally.
Yeah.
It's the literal, the program, what it is. And sometimes if the program appears to be extremely derivative, meaning that it's not at all original, that basically they just went and read a book by Tony Robbins or something and, you know, lots of other gurus, and now they figure I can do that too. That's not so good. Or if it's just a program which is like, well, oh, really? You know, like my kid in third grade, you know, could have said that. You know, that's not so good. But if it's something that has really been developed through experience, through intuition, through trial and error, and is replicable, meaning it can be used by others in a real practical, down-to-earth way, then we got something to work with.
Hey, don't diss the third graders.
I wasn't.
they come up with some very creative things. They're not jaded. So Akshay, what would you say in maybe 5 steps, what would be the crux of the program that you would be presenting in your book?
So some of the – so if I had to break it down into 5 steps, this is one of the 5 steps that I teach. And this may – the first step may sound very simple, the first step, what I teach people, is actually know who you are and what drives you. So I go into a lot of – I know this Tony Robbins does it, but I've actually created my own system around it of human needs psychology. I help people shift what their beliefs actually are. What are their associations? What are their current anchors? Are they anchored to certain factors? So I find out what is the current place, because I'm also, you know, as you mentioned, an abundance coach. This is also what I do for work. So I find out really in depth what are their driving forces that drive them. And then we create a clear plan on what they actually want to do in their life. So that's kind of step number 2 is what is the clear plan that you want to create? And we get really into detail. And once we have a clear place of where we want to go and what we want to do with their life, I actually change the associations of their present anchors, their present pain, pleasure, conditioning, their present beliefs, and we shift it So it actually is in line with that new future they want to create. And then what I do is I get help people understand their why, their driving forces that drive them. So what is the purpose you want to create these things? Without a purpose, nobody does anything. And then I do one of my fourth step would be is a little bit radical. I actually have them meditate on death. Ancient samurai used to do this practice where they would have people picture themselves dying on a regular basis. And theirs was a little harsh, maybe even, you know, picture swords going in, cutting your heads off, or arrows piercing into your hearts. And I don't go into that extreme. But
that's good. Although for some audiences, that would be great.
It depends. I mean, I practice a lot of things from my own life that are very risky. So this is what has me embrace this ideology. And Steve Jobs himself has actually endorsed it in that he said that realizing that I'll be dead soon is the number one tool that I've found in making the big decisions in life. So I have people that I work with actually envision their death. What is it going to look like? And are you, and at that deathbed perspective, are you happy with the life that you have lived? And once we do that, and using a lot of psychological research, I condition new habit patterns, because habits are the one factor that separates successful people from failures is that they have successful habits. I'm sure you both can attest to it in that you both have achieved a lot of success in your lives. And using research, MIT researchers have actually found that habits consist of a cue, a routine, and a reward. I help them shift that routine by interrupting the routine, doing something that shocks them, and keeping the reward the same. The key to shifting any habit is keeping the cue and the reward the same, but shifting the routine. So that would be kind of five steps, and that's a small breakdown of a further out sort of program that I'm kind of developing as I work through this book. But those are five steps that I incorporate often into my work.
Well, see, again, you're thinking in the right way. And do you feel that you have I don't know how long you've been working on your book, but do you feel that you have any barriers yourself in making this book proposal and book happen?
I don't see any barriers personally. I mean, the only barrier that was stopping me when I procrastinated in the past was sort of just myself. There was a little bit of, ironically, I'm writing a book about fear, but there was fear around, you know, will people buy this book? Will people want to read this? And there was fear around it, which I'm sure many authors go through. And it's the idea of just realizing and this is again what I do with my work as well, is realizing what's beyond the fear and what's important. When people come tell me that my messages help them, you know, transform their lives, I had a client who was a mom. She's now making over $6,000 a month, and as well as while following her passion for singing. That's what it's all about, is the difference you're going to make. And that's what I don't want to ignore, is even if it changes just one life, that's the one life that I could touch. So that's what drives my book forward. So there's no real block, but other than just myself, I guess.
Well, and that's really the essence of your book too. Exactly. Is, you know, now that now we're talking about it as something that exists. Mm-hmm. Do you see? And that's also something we recommend, is it exists. Now you're just going to explain it. You're going to put it into this format, into this structure that we've worked with for at least 20 years. And it breaks it down into bites. And then you're going to understand how to convey your passion, your enthusiasm, and your program to someone else who can take what comes right from your brain and your passion and your life and turn that into something that is tangible, that people will be able to read, take with them, and use. It's really cool.
Yeah, and I love the way, Deborah, you said that, because now it makes it tangible, it makes it exist. And this is one thing I love to do, is I'm actually like now started visualizing on a daily basis, morning and evening, walking up on stage and being announced as a best-selling author. And that makes it real for me. And I hope you're any audience listening to start doing that, to visualize yourself as a best-selling author every day. And that makes it more real, just as you said, Deborah. That's a really valuable point to add.
Were you going to add, Jeff?
Yeah, well, first of all, actually, you know, I thought that you articulated your program as well as I've, you know, ever heard anybody articulate it. I know that you can put that in writing. But as an agent, it made me think of another aspect of the proposal, which I would look at, which is the so-called competition section. It's a distinct part of the proposal. And what the writer does here is they identify maybe as many as half a dozen other books that are successful. basically on the same subject. And there doesn't have to be anything said about those books in a negative way. But what the writer has to do is show how they are going to be differentiating themselves from these books, but at the same time capitalizing upon the success that those books achieved, because it's going to be for the same audience. It's just mm-hmm. because people don't just buy one book on the same subject. I mean, I remember a book which is probably still a backlist strong seller called Feel the Fear mm-hmm. and Do It Anyway, I think by a woman named Jeffers or Jeffords. Yeah. You know, and there's probably a few other of the so-called classics, you know, that touch on that.
So I guess to add to that, you still have work to do if you want to rise completely above everyone to take one of those top percentage places in the publishing industry. You still have work to do to distinguish yourself so that people associate you with this subject and this program and this process, and this is the result that they're going to have in doing that. So your personal story needs to be, you articulate it well, but maybe there are other aspects of your story for different audiences that you mm-hmm. may want to expand. You know, you need to figure out the topics that you speak about for different audiences. I know you do a blog. But are you using, you know, the concepts of branding and marketing so that you are distinguished as the expert in that area? Is that, Jeff, I think you would agree that he still has work to do to distinguish himself, and he may already have all the ingredients.
Well, I don't know. He may have done the work. So if he has done the work, meaning that he already has a rich fan-based community of thousands of people. Doesn't have to be hundreds of thousands, but thousands of people who are aware of him because of his expertise and are willing and eager to hear what he has to say next, to the point where they will take $20 or $30 to buy his book retail. And that's really what a publisher is looking for, is that as a minimum, that your people are going to buy at least 10,000 copies, and all you need to do is sneeze, okay, literally, and 10,000 copies. You know, that's not a big sell-through, but that's like the minimum. And then if a writer is looking for, let's say, a six-figure advance figure, like a few hundred thousand dollars or something as an advance from a publisher, they then almost have to guarantee that upon sneezing, they can sell 50,000 books. And it can't just be, well, I will, because that and 250 get you on the subway. it's got to be because and a publisher more or less knows what to look for. It's got to be demonstrated that you have 100,000 or more people who are really into you and your message. And they'll shell out for that book because they want to for themselves, not to do you a favor.
Got it. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And sorry, go ahead,
yeah.
Deborah.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, just as you said, Deborah, I definitely have work to do in that. It's continued work in progress in terms of building my following. I have managed to generate in about 2 months of work about 700 subscribers on my blog, and I'm building relationships with many active bloggers who have already sort of committed to helping me promote my book as soon as it's out. So, but it's a work in progress, and that's the kind of plan while on the sidelines while I complete my book in the coming months. So it's definitely always work to do.
And what I would do if I were consulting with you on your marketing and social media is I would want to carefully analyze your, you know, let's say we were looking at what people are searching for. Where do you fit in? Because it's the same mentality as when they go in the bookstore. Where are they going? What are they looking for? So if we were to look at your blog, for example, you know, what are you writing about? What are they searching for? Mm-hmm. And what are you telling them that is different and that is totally unique to what you are teaching? And then I would want to look at, even though you are gaining followers through your social media, how are you engaging with them? What is the, you know, why are they sharing your tweets? Are they an actually engaged group of followers, or are they followers who are going to drop off? I mean, and you know, because you do marketing, I see you that you're doing marketing, that these are questions you're asking yourself, but there is a way to analyze the big picture and create a unified strategy. And that would be something I'd want to look at with you, is to see, well, are there areas where I can increase the engagement and connection, because then those people, I mean, I know you've got all the potential. I know we were talking earlier about the different plugins you're using, mm-hmm. and all of the things you have on your site, but are you optimizing what you're writing about? Are you optimizing your content? Are you optimizing ways to draw the people to you as the expert on this subject? And that's what we would need to determine. Now, you know, I don't know how you feel about that.
Oh, no. God, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, exactly what you're saying. And it's something that I'm definitely working on. And it is a continued work in progress. And as you said, I'm learning a lot about marketing myself. I help my clients with it through online marketing. So I feel like, you know, it's working on it, getting there, and I have a lot of tips that I'd love to share with people. And just in terms of putting yourself in other people's audiences is the number one way to grow your audience. And that's why I'm building relationship with other people who have larger followings online as well, to help them promote their work. And then they help me promote mine when mine comes out. So it's definitely a work in progress, but there's things moving forward with it that I feel good about for sure.
Well, you're certainly an example of someone who's utilizing technology, mm-hmm. and it's wonderful. And I'm looking forward to seeing how it grows and how the overall picture develops, because I think you really have something here that certainly can rise to the top and can do what people are trying to do as writers, which is to grab that, you know, we're both a little bit older, not much, but you know, like in the olden days, people used to ride the carousel and try to grab the brass ring. Well, nowadays, the brass ring would be traditional publishing. What would you like to add, Jeff?
Well, the most successful nonfiction writers in the self-help how-to categories tend to be, I mean, there's always exceptions, but they tend to be authors who also are marketing machines. Okay, that's not as true for other categories, but it's very much true for self-help how-to. And it also, interestingly enough, self-help how-to books do not require the same editorial skill that other, especially fiction, requires. I mean, clearly it has to be, it has to be literate and it has to be readable, but it does not have to be, great literature. It's not the expectation. So I just wanted to put that in there.
And it has to fulfill. Yeah, it has to be lucid. It has to be organized. I think that's even more important. I think that when editors and agents read something, you know, that really follows the structure and they know what they're getting, I think
and consistent.
That's even better than something that's that's flowery and literary when it comes to nonfiction.
You don't want your writing style to get in the way of your program, for
right.
instance.
Yeah.
Right. Do you have it? We're getting close to the top of the hour. Do you have any other questions for us?
Yes. I guess the one thing I'm curious to, you mentioned different styles of publishing, whether self-publishing or traditional publishing. And one thing I've heard too is that, I mean, I don't know if this is true, but if you go traditional publishing, it takes 18 months for the book to be out.
No.
Is that no?
It's a, no. Well, it could, depending
it could.
On the book.
It could take 2 years.
Yeah, that's long. I don't think any publisher now really wants it to be that long, unless it's a very celebrity driven and everybody's going to wait that long, you know, because trends change so fast. So at least in nonfiction, I think the expectation would be half of that, Jeff.
Well, for a self-help how-to book, the publisher would probably need at least 6 months upon having an acceptable manuscript to publish the book. So if you hand in a manuscript that doesn't need any work, everything is just fine, in January, the publisher should be able to have it out on the shelves by July. Now, you might say, well, why can't they just, you know, go and have it printed real fast and, you know, put it out in February if it's all good in January? The reason is because there's a whole network, a whole process of a whole layer of things that have to happen. We're talking about selling and distributing a physical product. And books, just like in the fashion industry and other industry, books are sold 6 months ahead of time before they're actually shipped.
And there has to – I mean, there is a lot that goes into the development of a book. It has to go to production, which means it has to be copy edited. It has to be conceptually edited. I mean, there's so many different things before you even get into the physical layout and the sales department and the pre-sales copy, the marketing plan. It's great for certain types of books because it is the difference between perhaps being a marginal book and being a true bestseller that is in all whatever bookstores there are and has the visibility. I mean, there are very big advantages to it, but in my opinion, the field is being leveled, the playing field, because a lot of self-publishing is viable. And in terms of return, the author, if they have marketing behind them, can do very well with self-published books. And then either they can license it to a larger publisher for distribution, or they can continue with a cottage industry of their own. In fact, I'm about to launch a self-publishing website called offthebookshelf.com that has many ways for people to create books. If they have a book that's all ready to go, that's edited and they're happy with it, you know, we're trying to encourage people to have their books either professionally edited or if you've got a relative who is a professional editor, you know, not just someone who likes you, you know, because you want to compete in the marketplace. And what you need to do as a self-publisher is provide for yourself the types of things you would get if you were in a publishing house.
Yeah. Can I add something to
you
that?
You certainly can.
Okay. In theory, self-publishing could actually be more dynamic than using a traditional publisher. However, if you look at the lists on Smashwords, Smashbooks, whatever it is, Lulu, BookBaby, if you look at all the hundreds of thousands or millions of books that are self-published, you will find that something like 95% of them are not even selling 10 copies a year. And I'm sure that that was not the expectation for most of that 95%. Mm-hmm. Now, 1% or less probably than 1% of the self-publishers are probably selling tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, or in the case of 50 Shades of Grey, millions of copies, you know, as self-publishers. So yes, it can be done, but it's a lot easier said than done.
But that's why Off the Bookshelf is a different type of place. Because,
yes.
Okay, but we don't have time to talk about it. I am very excited about it, and it's not going to leave people with books in their warehouses. It has marketing education. It has editing available, and I am really excited. So I will turn that statistic on its head, but
yes.
Unfortunately, we are at the top of the hour. And we're going to have to close. Akshay, I'm very happy to meet you. We are certainly welcome on the show again. Jeff, you're always welcome. Akshay, how can people find you?
My website is existingtoliving.com. So
say it slow and spell it.
Sure. Existing, E-X-I-S-T-I-N-G. Then you can either type in T-O or the number 2. And living, LIVING.com. Existing to living. Talking about the journey of how to stop existing and start really living.
And thank people you, can learn you. A lot.
Thank yeah. you so much for joining us. Please, for members of our audience, join us each week, this time on this station, for Off the Bookshelf Radio with Deborah Herman, your host, and quite often a surprise visit from Jeff Herman himself. Thank you for joining us. Good night.
Okay, good night.